Being with us, Andrew Bacevich, a retired colonel, Vietnam War veteran, president and co-founder of the anti-war think tank Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. His latest book is After the Apocalypse.
Listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Tune in to KBOO on Friday, March 11th at 8 p.m. for KBOO's Music That Moves You Dance Marathon! Yeah! As a part of our All Thrills, No Frills special programming campaign, the Blooming Universe presents music that moves you in almost every genre and era dance music 12-hour marathon. How do you express yourself via dance? Do you thrash, two-step, or shoulder lean? Do you enjoy the cha-cha, the running man, or tango? Are you stoked on the chicken noodle soup, mashed potato, or do you just love eating mashed potatoes? I know I do. DJ Kabloom and friends will provide a whimsical, creative, funky, silly, groovy, bombastic, and extra rad venue for you all to be the dancing queen you are always meant to be. Again, that's KBOO's Music That Moves You Marathon starting at 8 p.m. and carrying on through Saturday morning.
Join KBOO every Friday at 5:30 p.m. for Counterspin, a show that provides a critical examination of major media stories and exposes what the mainstream media missed. Counterspin exposes and highlights censored stories, sexism, racism, and homophobia in the news, the power of corporate influence, gaffes and goofs by leading TV pundits, and more. That's every Friday at 5:30 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, state officials warn some opioid pills are laced with fentanyl. Unused vaccines are expected to expire in Oregon. And, in international news, 8 million in Yemen could lose all aid due to UN budget cuts. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, March 11th, 2022. I'm Josh Salem. Starting this Saturday, March 12th, Oregon and Washington will end masking mandates for indoor public places and schools. Under both states' current guidance, businesses and local governments and public health authorities can decide whether to lift or extend masking requirements. Restaurants, gyms, grocery stores, and other private businesses in both states may continue to require masking after the statewide mandate lifts, based on individual scenarios and circumstances. Several school districts intend to make masking optional starting on Monday, though the Park Grove School District will keep the mandate in place until March 29th, following the end of spring break. The Park Grove School Superintendent says this decision is based on the disproportionate impact COVID-19 has had on the district compared with other parts of the city and state. According to the Transportation Secretary Administration, the masking requirement will remain in place for public transit through April 18th. That means masks will need to stay on for those on planes, buses, trains, and transit hubs until mid-April, which allows for the CDC to determine and finalize a framework under which circumstances masks should be worn during transit. Both the Oregon Health Authority and the Washington State Department of Health will also maintain mask requirements for healthcare settings, such as hospitals, doctor's offices, dentist offices, and urgent care and dialysis centers. Several universities have updated their guidelines and likely will continue requiring mask wearing for students and faculty in student health centers, childcare settings, and public transportation. Further optimism moving forward follows new modeling from OHSU, which predicts by the end of April, 100 people or less will be needing hospitalization from COVID-19. Multnomah County leaders marked Thursday as the second year since the first reported case of the novel coronavirus was documented in the county. The Oregon Health Authority hopes to avoid wasting over 700,000 COVID-19 vaccination doses. A drop in demand for the shot has led to a significant surplus in inventory. The OHA wants to get the viable doses to vaccine providers around the state. The agency believes demand for vaccine is not yet over. It is possible the lifting of the mask mandate may interest Oregonians still concerned about developing serious illness without vaccination. The total number of doses wasted, spoiled, or expired since vaccination began is under 700,000. Some 68% of Oregonians are fully vaccinated against COVID-19. That figure is slightly higher than the national average of 65%. There are many explanations for vaccine wastage, including shipping problems, poor refrigeration, breakage, and expiration. Both the Johnson & Johnson and Pfizer vaccines now have longer times till expiration, which does cut down on wasted doses. California wastes about 1.8% of their vaccinations, but that still translates to roughly 1.4 million doses. Other countries also struggle with wasting vaccinations. According to Oregon Public Radio, more than 1 million doses of the Russian Sputnik vaccine expired this week in Guatemala because nobody wanted to take the shot. Following the recent death of two Portland teenagers, the Oregon Poison Center has issued a public health warning about counterfeit opioid pills containing fentanyl, the suspected cause of both fatalities. Fentanyl is roughly 50 to 100 times stronger than morphine, making even a tiny dose potentially lethal, and when combined with other opioids or sedatives, a dangerous combination. Local health experts have been warning the public that pills mimicking oxycodone tablets may be containing illicitly manufactured fentanyl and/or other harmful contaminants. Earlier this month, Portland police responded to two separate overdoses of teens in possession of fentanyl-laced pills, commonly known as M30s. According to current statistics, deaths related to fentanyl in Multnomah County have more than doubled from 2020 to 2021. Health experts are urging the public to avoid using counterfeit pills and to stick to prescribed medications at recommended dosages. For those using illicit drugs recreationally, an overdose antidote, naloxone, better known under the brand name Narcan, is urged to be carried or at least readily available. Naloxone is an agent that reverses opioid overdoses, and though it is most often used as an injection in a hospital setting, it is available and effective as a nasal spray. The key advice from the Oregon Poison Center is simply to only consume pills, drugs, and prescriptions obtained from a pharmacy and which have been prescribed to you. Professional advice strongly urges against sharing and consuming someone else's prescription drugs or purchasing drugs of any sort online without a health professional's input. Symptoms of a suspected fentanyl overdose may include small constricted pupils, pale to bluish skin, vomiting, and foaming at the mouth. And if a dosage of naloxone has not been given or is available, you should call 911 immediately. In the last year, a Northwest survey has revealed that intentional use of fentanyl has increased by 18% since 2019, with two-thirds of the 1,000 people surveyed saying they took the drug knowingly. Healthcare workers at OHSU's Richmond Clinic staged a rally Wednesday to protest what they described as a racist and discriminatory work environment perpetuated by clinic administration. A report last year by an outside consultant found an unhealthy work environment characterized by racial microaggressions, discriminatory hiring practices, and a lack of accountability. The report, which was leaked to the Portland Mercury, was only shared with OHSU management. In response to the findings, the same administrators who faced these accusations formed a culture committee to improve workplace culture. Staff say because the committee consists of only management, it has been entirely ineffective. Even so-called liberal United States cities are targeting houseless camps, according to Report for America and the Associated Press. The pandemic led to many venues temporarily halting sweeps, based on guidance from federal health officials. The number of campsites removed in Portland fell to 5 from 50. This led to a dramatic expansion of visible tent cities in many areas. Now, leaders are removing encampments and pushing other strict houselessness measures. Portland Mayor Wheeler has used emergency powers to ban camping along certain roadways and has called houselessness the, quote, most important issue facing our community, bar none, end quote. New Seattle Mayor Bruce Harrell ran on a campaign that called for action on encampments. 2 blocks of tents and belongings were removed from an area across from City Hall earlier this week. This ended a 2.5-week standoff between the mayor and activists who occupied the camp to keep houseless people from being removed. In Washington, D.C., Mayor Muriel Bowser launched a pilot program aimed at permanently clearing several houseless camps. Lawmakers there recently voted on a bill that would ban temporary clearings, but it failed. The Los Angeles City Council used new laws to ban camping in 54 locations, including properties around libraries and elementary schools. LA mayoral candidate Joe Buscaino has introduced plans for a ballot measure that would prohibit people from sleeping outdoors in public spaces if they have turned down offers of shelter. In Sacramento, proposed ballot measures prohibit people from storing needles and feces on public and private property. A conservation group there is demanding that 750 people camping along a 23-mile corridor of the American River Parkway be removed. Overall, at least 65 cities are criminalizing or sweeping encampments. Opponents have denounced aggressive measures, saying addressing houselessness is a chance for cheap political gains instead of a humanitarian crisis. Portland's houseless crisis has grown significantly. An estimated 4,015 people were experiencing houselessness in 2019, with half unsheltered or sleeping outside. Those numbers have likely significantly increased recently. Sam Adams, former Portland mayor and Wheeler advisor, has outlined a controversial plan that would force up to 3,000 homeless people into massive temporary shelters staffed by Oregon National Guard members. Opponents say that move would criminalize houselessness. Advocates for the houseless are urging mayors to find long-term solutions, like permanent housing, and asking them to address root causes like addiction and affordability. The situation has affected businesses and events. Oregon's largest annual golf tournament, the LPGA Tours Portland Classic, relocated from Portland last year due to safety concerns related to a nearby houseless encampment. Some question whether the tougher approach is legal. A 2018 federal court decision, Martin versus Boise, ruled cities cannot make it illegal for people to sleep or rest outside without providing sufficient indoor alternatives. Some are worried ballot measures to crack down on houselessness may emerge in November if governments don't sufficiently address the houseless problem. Vice President Kamala Harris met with NATO leaders in Europe yesterday. Harris offered a show of solidarity in the wake of a fracture between the U.S. and Poland over the transfer of fighter jets to Ukraine. With more on this story and others, it's Mary Sherman with 2022 Talks.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
And I have no question the eyes of the world are on this war and what Russia has done in terms of this aggression and these atrocities. I have no doubt.
In a Europe meeting with NATO allies, Vice President Kamala Harris joined calls for a war crimes investigation of Russia over the Ukraine invasion. Harris met with Poland's president after the White House rejected a Warsaw proposal to transfer Soviet-made fighter jets to a U.S. base in Germany to assist Ukraine. The Pentagon said it could escalate the war, but Senator Mitt Romney and other Republicans urged Biden to reverse course.
I believe there's a sentiment that we're fearful about what Putin might do and what he might consider as an escalation. It's time for him to be fearful of what we might do.
Russia has requested a U.N. Security Council meeting to debate its allegation the U.S. spent millions on biological laboratories in Ukraine. The Pentagon dismissed the claims. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer hopes the chamber can reach a deal to avoid a government shutdown at midnight. The House approved a stopgap spending bill to keep the lights on through March 15th and give the Senate more time to mull a larger spending bill. Inflation grew worse in February, with the consumer price index up almost 8% over the past 12 months, a 40-year high. And with record-high gas prices expected to go higher, Senate Democrats introduced the Big Oil Windfall Profits Tax to tax fuel company profits. Republicans advocate ramping up production to ease prices. Democratic Senator Elizabeth Warren counters it would not lead to energy independence.
If we had been serious about moving off fossil fuels 25 years ago, 20 years ago, how can I do this, 10 years ago, then Russia wouldn't have the power it has today. This is what the whole Russian economy is built on.
Several legislators are considering proposals to reduce state gas taxes. Others want to pause on federal gas taxes. More than 200 people charged in connection with the January 6 attack at the U.S. Capitol have pleaded guilty. Six have been sentenced to prison terms of 41 to 63 months. President Biden is facing growing pressure from his own party to end Title 42, a rule allowing the expulsion of newly arrived migrants to prevent the spread of COVID-19. New Jersey Senator Bob Menendez argues people with valid refuge claims are being turned away.
Title 42 is being used in a way that I think is indiscriminate and that violates the basic essence of our law.
More than 1 million migrants have been expelled under the Trump-era rule. And the CDC is extending requirements for travelers to wear masks on airplanes, trains, and in transit hubs through April 18th. The mandate has resulted in a spike in unruly passenger incidents reported since January 2021. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin. At 6, it's the Women's History Month series. Then at 7, it's Music That Moves You. Tonight's weather is clear, with lows in the mid-30s. Expect rain all day tomorrow, with a high of 57. 2 years ago today, the World Health Organization declared COVID-19 a pandemic. The quote of the day is from Dr. Anthony Fauci. You can't rush science, but when science points you in the right direction, then you can start rushing. Passed a $1.5 trillion spending bill today. Not included was a renewal of the pandemic-era free school lunch program. More than 8 million children last year received free school lunches, and many working-class families rely on them to keep their kids fed. North Dakota children will be hit particularly hard. With more on why, here's Mike Moen.
Nearly 9% of North Dakota households say they don't have enough to eat right now. And the push to expand free meals for students at school appears to have ended as the pandemic wanes. A hunger relief group says it's clear the need isn't going away. The household numbers were reported in the most recent U.S. Census poll survey data, and plans to extend universal free school lunches beyond June were scrapped in congressional budget talks. Jared Slindy with the Great Plains Food Bank says when you factor in higher food costs, organizations like his have to stay on their toes.
We always want to be prepared to be able to provide the service to as high a level as we can because there's going to be people that are going to need it for quite some time.
He says with fewer bulk donations from the food industry, they anticipate having to make more purchases to help maintain supplies at local food shelves. The group reports serving more than 120,000 North Dakotans in 2021, the second highest total in its history. While down from the previous year, officials say it's still much higher than pre-COVID cycles. Higher grocery costs carried over into 2022 following supply chain issues. And June 30th is the scheduled end date for universal free school meals the federal government provided during the pandemic. Supporters say extending it would mean more certainty for households and districts still leaning on the extra support. But some Republicans say with COVID cases waning, free meals should be offered only to those who qualify. With all these outside forces affecting families, Slindy says it's vital that people who want to help consider making monetary donations.
The way we're structured, we're able to provide 3 meals for each dollar donated, which, you know, we're able to stretch that quite a ways.
Great Plains works with nearly 200 food pantries, soup kitchens, and other free meal programs. Mike Moen, Prairie News Service.
The Michigan legislature asked Governor Gretchen Whitmer to ignore calls to shut down the Line 5 pipelines, despite evidence that doing so would have no effect on energy prices or production. With more, Here's Lily Bulkey.
The Michigan legislature approved a resolution this week backing energy independence and asking Governor Gretchen Whitmer to call off attempts to shut down the Line 5 dual pipelines. With gas prices surging amid the Russian invasion of Ukraine, lawmakers who supported this resolution say domestic oil production should be a priority. But Sean McBeardy with the Oil and Water Don't Mix Coalition says conversations about energy independence and security should focus on building renewables faster rather than relying on more fossil fuel.
We have to realize that the sooner we can get away from oil and natural gas and other fossil fuels, the sooner we can get away from dictators like Vladimir Putin being able to leverage things like that in this sort of a war that he's pursuing right now in the Ukraine.
The pipelines are operated by Enbridge Energy, a Canadian company pursuing building a tunnel around them. Though environmental advocates and engineers have raised serious financial and safety concerns, Enbridge has said shutting down Line 5 would cause energy market disruptions, though McBeardy points to multiple studies showing the pipelines could be closed without any price or supply disruption. McBeardy notes the resolution is non-binding and will have no impact on the future of Line 5. He thinks it's important that the pipeline shutdown efforts continue.
There's plenty of capacity elsewhere in the system for the product that moves through Line 5. And with the declining demand that we're going to be seeing in future years, there's no reason we should be looking at building an oil tunnel through the Great Lakes.
This week, Whitmer joined five other governors asking Congress to suspend the federal gas tax with prices so high. The request comes as the national average price of gas surpassed the previous record from the 2008 recession. This is Lily Bulkey with Michigan News Connection. Find our A-Trust indicators for transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
A new bill in the Colorado State House is being lauded by Indigenous leaders. If passed, it would create a new office for tracking missing and murdered Indigenous women. With that story and more, it's National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Advocates are cheering the introduction of a Colorado bill that would create an office for missing and murdered Indigenous relatives. The Mountain West News Bureau's Robin Vincent reports it would put the state in the company of several others in the region.
A look at the numbers explains the urgency. Federal data show more than 4 in 5 American Indian and Alaska Native women have experienced violence in their lifetime. More than half have endured sexual violence. Meanwhile, Indigenous women and girls face murder rates 10 times the national average. The office would work across jurisdictions and provide support to affected families. Democratic State Senator Jesse Danielson co-sponsored the bill.
We looked at states like Wyoming and others that had established offices or task forces because the states in the Mountain West region that have already tried to work on the issue, I figured we could learn from what they've done.
If the bill passes in the state legislature, Colorado would join Wyoming, Utah, New Mexico, Montana, along with multiple states nationwide. For National Native News, I'm Robin Vincent.
The area of the Coeur d'Alene River Basin and Chain Lakes in North Idaho is contaminated with lead and heavy metals from a century of mining waste that has traveled downstream from the Silver Valley. A new study is looking at how the contamination impacts tundra swans. Steve Jackson reports.
Lead contamination poses a risk to migratory birds in the area, including tundra swans, which can suffer intestinal, kidney, and reproductive issues. Now, a collaborative effort is underway to measure where the swans are exposed to contaminated sediment and if their overall exposure to lead is decreasing due to feeding in some wetlands that have been cleaned of the toxic metals. The Coeur d'Alene tribe is involved in the study in part because of the importance of the swan to their culture. The birds actually help proliferate an important tribal food, the water potato. Restoration coordinator for the tribe, Rebecca Stevens, says the swans perform what is called scarification to the potato seeds, which breaks through the seed shell to allow water in.
And so as they feed on water potatoes, they're actually helping to disperse those water potatoes, which are very culturally significant to the Coeur d'Alene people.
Results of the sampling are expected to be released in a few months. For National Native News, I'm Steve Jackson reporting from Spokane.
Haskell Indian Nations University women's basketball team secured a spot in the National Association of Intercollegiate Athletics tournament. The team will travel to Kentucky to face their first opponent. Rhonda Lavaldo has more.
With March Madness underway, there is one Indigenous team set to make their appearance in postseason play. Haskell women's basketball team watched a live bracket reveal to see what team they would face.
Seated Indians of Haskell. Yeah!
Number one seed, Thomas More University. Senior Tiana Gullery spoke on how the season has been.
It's really exciting, and I think a lot of us are really grateful. We have a tremendous coaching staff that's believing us since day one. They do a lot for us, and as a group, we really worked hard for this.
First-year head coach Adam Strong talked about how his team not only plays for their school, but they play for all tribal nations.
Here at Haskell Indian Nations University, our women's basketball team plays for Indian country. They play for Indian nation. They play for something, you know, bigger than themselves. So it's something that we take very, you know, seriously.
The team will play their first game on Friday. This is Rhonda Lavaldo for National Native News.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Images from Australia this week showed bridges submerged, wreckage piling in cities, and homes surrounded by water. Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison declared a state of emergency for catastrophic floods in Queensland and New South Wales. Morrison described the national disaster as a once-in-500-year event, although a similar flood occurred in 2011. 40,000 people have been ordered to evacuate, and 300,000 are under an evacuation warning. Despite unprecedented flooding in the last two decades, Australia has also suffered from the hottest and driest weather patterns in historical record. Wildfires in 2019 destroyed nearly 20 million hectares of forest and farmland, going beyond worst-case scenarios projected by the United Nations developed several years ago. Some Australians displaced by the floods are unlikely to receive adequate compensation for loss of property. Flood insurance could reach over $1,000 per month, which is unaffordable for many. Australia remains one of the largest producers of greenhouse gas emissions per capita. Despite having only 0.003% of the world's population, the country emits 1.3% of carbon emissions globally. Anger is growing in the country against Scott Morrison's conservative government, which critics say has refused to implement meaningful climate goals. India's defense ministry apologized for accidentally firing a missile into Pakistan Wednesday. The official statement said, quote, "While the incident is deeply regrettable, it is also a matter of relief that there have been no loss of life due to the incident," end quote. India chalked up the missile launch to technical problems. The two nuclear powers are divided along one of the world's most militarized borders. Skirmishes occasionally break out between the two armies, but there hasn't been a full war since 1999. The incident occurred during a lull in tensions. So far, there has been no escalation, although a major general in Pakistan's army reflected that the accident showed, quote, "India's disregard for aviation safety and reflects poorly on their technological prowess," end quote. All things considered, foreign policy experts consider both governments' collected responses a positive sign. Pakistan says the projectile was most likely a nuclear-capable BrahMos missile. With a maximum range of 310 miles, missiles such as the one accidentally fired Wednesday are capable of hitting Pakistan's capital, Islamabad. According to the World Food Program, 13 million people in Yemen rely on UN aid for daily nutrition. That aid could be severely cut back this month, or even stopped entirely, due to a lack of funding. If that happens, it would be an unprecedented move by the United Nations, effectively sentencing at least 8 million people to starvation because of a budget deficit. Saudi Arabia's bombing campaigns and embargo have turned Yemen's civil war into the world's worst humanitarian crisis. Over 150,000 people have been killed, partially by Iran-backed Houthi rebels, but principally by weapons sold to Saudi Arabia by the United States. The arms sales that began under President Obama have continued under Trump and Biden. In addition to a lack of support from developed nations, the people of Yemen are likely to be impacted by the war in Europe. Over 40% of Yemen's wheat imports come from Russia and Ukraine. Katerina Ritz, head of the Red Cross delegation in Yemen, urged the world that despite the catastrophe in Ukraine, it should not shift its focus away from Yemen and other humanitarian crises in the global south. Ritz told the Associated Press, quote, "I think our duty is to respond equally to the needs and do our best. Now it's Ukraine and Yemen and Syria and Iraq and Congo and so on. We have to add Ukraine on all the crises, but shouldn't shift," end quote. You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, March 11th, 2022. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem and Ethan Sandweiss. The producer is Ethan Sandweiss, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Lily Bolke, Jeffrey Wade, Antonia Gonzalez, Mike Moan, and Mary Sherman. The director of the evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Josh Salem. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you'd like to become a member and support your local community radio station, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Counterspin.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin,